Welcome to The Tome,
episode 16,
and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D review podcast, and in this episode, we will be reading into the Road of the Patriarch novel and the Eberron series of novels.
Plus, I'm going to give you that review that I did of the Drizzt graphic novels that I previously shared with Fistful of Comics.
Welcome again to
episode 16
of The Tome, D&D Novels Update. I will be talking about Road of the Patriarch by R.A. Salvatore, and Jeffrey Wynn sent in a great review of Eberron novels. Other Tome news, I have completed an interview with wildly popular audiobook author J.C. Hutchins, who wrote Seventh Son. We had a great time, and he's a really cool guy, and we talked about D&D and gaming and about his novel, and I think it's a really awesome thing to share with you guys, so look forward to that coming up soon. Also coming up, Dragons of Faerun. This review is getting very close to being ready to go, and of course I will continue keeping you up to date with Dragon, at least until someone else wants to try doing Dragon Magazine reporting, and Dungeon from William Paul. Plus, I have a lot of other D&D books on my list to buy coming up. So, as summer approaches, I'm going to get very busy with the Tome. Hopefully, my internet storage ability keeps up. As for D&D news this time around, all I have this episode is previews for May and beyond. For May, there's Drow of the Underdark, which is made for any setting. This book includes all sorts of information to make Drow work for your game and flesh them out into a complex civilization, more than just an entry in the Monster Manual. Ruins of the Wild, Dungeon Tiles 4, a new dungeon tile set for wilderness settings. Complete Champion, seemingly a meaningful draw from the Complete Divine book from some time back. Make your bright and shining pillar of goodness in the community character shine even brighter. I'll be buying this book and most likely reviewing it. For June, there's The Sinister Spire, an adventure that is the sequel to The Barrow of the Forgotten King. Expedition to Undermountain, where you can travel to the extensive ruins originally set below the city of Waterdeep in the Forgotten Realms. This is the latest of the Expedition series made to take classic adventures and make them work for any setting. Just like they did with Ravenloft, and that was good, so I'm going to check this one out. The Forge of War for Eberron, finally telling us what happened during the last war and giving you what you need if you wanted to adventure during that time period. I'll stop there and not cover the July previews until a later podcast that I'll release in June, so I'll try to stay about a month ahead on the previews as I'm getting the feel for this news section of the show. If you have any further news for the Tome, please feel free to email it along or send me a link. Now a word from J.C. Hutchins, who you're going to be hearing more from in an upcoming special episode, and then we'll get into the review.
One man.
No.
Two men.
Going.
Three men.
Seven men.
Seven men.
Seven clones.
Holy sh**. Seven clones?
Of one man.
Seven clones of one man.
Who killed the president?
Who killed the president?
Yes, just John Alpha.
The president is John Alpha?
No, Seventh.
Seven clones.
Seven clones.
Of one man.
Of one man.
John Alpha.
John Alpha.
The Seventh Son Trilogy.
The Seventh Son Trilogy.
From J.C.
Jesus Christ.
No, the other J.C.
Jonathan Colton.
No, the other J.C.
J.C. Hutchins.
Put it all together.
Seven clones of one man. John Alpha, who killed the president. From J.C. Hutchins, it's The Seventh Son Trilogy. Visit www.jchutchins.net for more information.
All right. right, that's a wrap.
Thank God.
Now, into the review. First up, I'm going to tell you a bit about the novel Road of the Patriarch, which is the last book in a series called The Cell Swords by R.A. Salvatore, extremely popular Forgotten Realms author. This trilogy by R.A. Salvatore follows the exploits of Artemis Entreri, the assassin from the Drizzt novels, and Jarl Axel, the drow mercenary from Minzo Branzen. In many ways, this is some of Salvatore's best characters, but in some ways I found this story a little bit disappointing in the way some of the things played out. Artemis is one of the characters that I've really been interested in for a long time, ever since he was introduced in the Drizzt novels. He's always had a really strong personality, and I always felt like I wanted to know more about him. Jarl Axel, on the other hand, is always fun to have in a story as a source of adventure and almost frivolity in his often chaotic-seeming actions. Well, this book reveals more about them as they work together to achieve their independent goals, while at the same time trying to deal with each other. In the end, this is a story about the characters each developing and changing into people with different outlooks, and very different motives than they might have had when the trilogy started. Normally, I would talk about the whole trilogy instead of just one book, but it has been a while since I've read the other two books, and besides, they don't really tie together like many Salvatore trilogies do. Let me explain. These books follow the same characters, and there are events in one book that might impact the next story, and they are tied together in that way, but it's not really the same story in all three books. In this book, Artemis and Jarl Axel are in Daimara. They're dealing with King Gareth and his companions, who are famed heroes and well-known in their own rights. They are also dealing with two dragons that they had taken up working for, which was discussed mostly in the first of the three books. They are dealing with the local thieves' guild and/or assassins, and they are dealing with an artifact of an evil magical castle that they found in the second book. Lastly, Artemis has a magic flute, which is sort of opening his heart and making him more aware of the goodness in himself, sort of-ish. In many ways, all of these things are really cool. In other ways, it's highly undeveloped. The dragons are almost non-existent in the story until now. The flute sort of shows up with a briefly stated explanation instead of actually telling the story of the flute and how they got it. King Gareth knights Artemis based on one action without gathering information about a known outsider of the kingdom. So there are weaknesses in the story that I'm simply not used to seeing in a Salvatore book. One of the things about the book is that it doesn't have a central story. I'm not sure if this is good, bad, or neutral. There is a whole story at the start dealing with the king and the assassins. Then it switches gears into a story that follows up the castle from the previous book. And then it ends all the way back in Kalimport. Not for an epilogue, but for a full third of the book. So it's sort of all over the place. You don't get one constantly developing story so much as constantly developing characters. You do get that, constantly developing characters. This is sort of explained by the chaotic methods of Jarl Axel. For the first two-thirds of the book, he clearly dominates the pair and makes the choices, thrusting them into adventure after adventure, sometimes, it seems, without cause or good reason. The last third of the story is what happens when Artemis suddenly decides to take control of his life and face his past, a past which had only sort of been alluded to in the previous appearances of the character in Salvatore's books. All that said, it is interesting to see what happens to the characters. And while it lacks a strong central story, it is also neat in some ways to read a book which does not conform to the normal formula of story construction. So at times, this bothered me, but once I started thinking about it more, it didn't really bother me as much anymore. Well, all in all, this book was enjoyable. But in my opinion, not as good as it should have been. I really like these characters. I really like them and their activities in other books, especially the first of the Sellsword series. But this book fell a little bit flat. It was a little bit anticlimactic. And as the conclusion of the story, I was expecting something much cooler from two characters which are, if anything, awesome. As somebody who likes to get certain books as hardcover, I'd say this is probably worth the hardcover price if you're a person who likes hardcover books. Paperback? It's definitely worth the paperback price. Anybody who's unfamiliar with Salvatore's work, this may not be the best example of everything that he can possibly give you, but it is a good and enjoyable book and definitely worth the paperback price. All right, next up, we have a review from Jeffrey Wynn, who sends in some great Eberron stuff for the tome. Here's his take on the Eberron novels of 2005 and 2006. 2005 and 2006 saw the first wave of Eberron novels published. Just like Forgotten Realms and Dragonlance before them, the publishers of D&D were depending on these novels to support and promote the campaign setting. I say these novels delivered well. They really got me hooked on Eberron. This review will cover three trilogies, one series, and an anthology of short stories. One thing I should note about Eberron novels that makes them different from novels for other D&D settings is that they never interfere with the meta plot or of the setting. You will never see world-shattering events like the Time of Troubles or the War of Souls or the Rage of Dragons in an Eberron novel. You will never see the death of an important Eberron NPC like Merrick Stakaneth or the Lord of Blades. In fact, NPCs from the source books hardly ever appear at all. The idea behind the novels is to show you the world of Eberron without interfering with your chance to experience it as a player. As Keith Baker himself said, after the events of an Eberron novel, all of the toys are put back in the box so the players can come and use them as if they'd never been disturbed. I think this is a really great approach, especially because Eberron is a new setting. You don't have to worry about keeping up with events, and you don't have to worry about your sourcebook becoming outdated. No one's going to kill Vol, the Lich Queen, or solve the mystery of the morning before your PCs have a chance to do so. Now for the novel reviews. I'll cover the trilogies first. The Dreaming Dark Trilogy. 1. City of Towers. 2. The Shattered Lands. 3. The Gates of Night, by Keith Baker. This was great. This was awesome. I can't say enough about this trilogy. The world of Eberron brought to you by the creator himself. Usually, with D&D novels, you get great action scenes and exotic settings, but the characters are two-dimensional, and the plot is straightforward and predictable. Baker is able to deliver both exciting adventure and great characters and plot. The trilogy follows the adventures of a group of last war veterans, each with their own hopes, fears, and secrets. The story is too convoluted to sum up here, but it all boils down to these characters trying to find a place for themselves in a world that has seen so much suffering and loss. The book also serves as a great tour of Eberron and a guide to some of the themes and underlying concepts. The first book is set in Sharn, the City of Towers, with all its beauty and conspiracies. The second book takes the characters to Zindrik, where they meet warring factions of jungle drow. The last book takes the characters across the plains of Eberron, which so far have not been discussed in any source book in great detail. A great ride. The Lost Mark Trilogy. 1. Marked for Death. 2. Road to Death. 3. Queen of Death, by Matt Forbeck. The trilogy comes close to violating Eberron's novel policy by dealing directly with one of the most important secrets of the setting. I started out sort of liking it, but was tired of it by the end. A young elf girl named Esprey is discovered to possess a strange dragon mark that has the power to kill people. People suspect that it is the mark of death, the lost dragon mark of the House of Vol. Esprey is kidnapped early in the first book. The first and second books are essentially a long, drawn-out chase sequence as Esprey's human stepfather and his companions try to get her back. Several times, Esprey escapes from her captor and is reunited with her friends, only to be snatched away again. This whole thing feels long, drawn out, and unnecessary, and on top of that, I found the characters annoying. The third book features a long, uneventful trip to Argan Essen, the land of Eberron's dragons, with the characters bickering and whining the whole way. In the end, the whole book felt like a pointless tease, because it's never revealed whether or not Espre's mark is actually the mark of death. I say avoid this trilogy. The Dragon Below Trilogy. 1. The Binding Stone. 2. The Grieving Tree. 3. The Killing Song. By Don Bassingthwaite. I wasn't expecting much, but this trilogy surprised me. It was really good. The trilogy deals with a group of heroes trying to stop Dahmer, a charismatic villain who leads a cult of the Dragon Below. The plot is relatively complex, as the characters try to discover what Dahmer is up to while avoiding his minions. The characters were really good. I liked them all. The trilogy features the Kalashtar, one of Eberron's unique races, especially in the last book. This was a great series, and I recommend it. The Wartorn, The Crimson Talisman by Adrian Cole, The Orb of Zoriat by Edward Bulme, In the Claws of the Tiger by James Wyatt, Blood and Honor by Graeme Davis. This series of novels is really four separate unconnected stories. The idea of the series is that each novel deals with people trying to sort out their lives after the last war. But that applies to pretty much every Eberron novel, so I don't really see what the point was. Some of these were better than others, but none were really bad. They'd probably be good to pick up if you have a long plane flight or something. I'll sum them up quickly. The Crimson Talisman was okay but forgettable. The Orb of Zoriat features a cool monk and a conniving gnome. And The Claws of the Tiger got me excited because there were Rakshasas on the cover, but there really weren't many Rakshasa in the book. Still not bad. Blood and Honor was cool if you like undead and vampires, but it left me scratching my head how the main character could go around killing zombies with a rapier. Tales of the Last War. Lastly, this anthology collects short stories from different authors. All of them were really pretty good. Death at White Hearth by Keith Baker is a reprint of a story that came packaged with the first Eberron Adventure module, Shadows of the Last War. Some of the stories featured characters from other novels. The Weight of Water featured Edward Bulme's monk from the Orb of Zoriat. Call of the Silver Flame serves as a nice prequel to In the Claws of the Tiger, although it also spoils some of the surprises in that book. The Blade of the Flame by Tim Wagoner is about a former assassin that now serves the Silver Flame. I liked this story a lot and thought the character Duran was pretty cool. However, when the character appeared later in his own novel, it wasn't so good. Finally, The War Machines, 992YK, by Ian Burton Oakes, reveals an unexpected connection between the modern-day Warforged and the distant plane of Dalkor. Interesting for Eberron lore masters. That's my review. Hope it wasn't too long. In summary, I would definitely pick up Keith Baker's Dreaming Dark trilogy, and then the Dragon Below trilogy. The other books you can pick out based on your own interest. I'd avoid the Lost Mark books. Well, thank you very much for that great, great review of the Eberron books, Jeffrey. And keep those things coming. You have been a great source of information about Eberron books for this podcast, and I really appreciate it. As a special bonus for you guys here, I did say at one time that I would include a review of the Drizzt graphic novels. And I recorded one a long time ago, maybe a month and a half ago, and it was played on the Fistful of Comics podcast, and they were great about that, and that was great, and I really enjoyed being on their show, and I've really become a part of their community, and I have a good time over at that podcast with those guys. They're really cool. I wanted to go ahead and give you a chance to hear what I had to think of and play that segment that I did for them right here. I'm not going to do much editing with it beyond what I already did for them. So I'm just going to give it to you right here as it was when I sent it to them, and you'll get a chance to hear what the Drizzt graphic novels are all about. That will take the place of listener feedback this time around, because as of this recording anyway, and I'm recording this fairly early, and it will probably be a while before this airs, but at the time of this recording, I really don't have any listener feedback at this point. So here is the Drizzt graphic novels review.
This is Jeff Greiner, host of the D&D review podcast, The Tome. And since Fistful of Comics and Games is a podcast that looks at comics and games, I thought about how I might participate in the crossover for this show. So I thought I'd put together a review, since that's what I do, of a comic, since that's what they do, based on a D&D novel that is official content, which is the focus of my show. It seems like a natural fit. So I suppose let's get started. I will be looking at The Legend of Drizzt graphic novels. R.A. Salvatore writer, Andrew Dobb script, Tim Seeley pencils, John Lowe, Marco Galli, Dennis Chrysostomo, and others for book one, Andrew Papoy, Marco Galli, and others for book two, John Rowe, Robert Q. Atkins, and others for book three, doing the inks, Blonde, doing the colors, Brian J. Crowley and Steve Seeley, doing the letters, and Mark Powers as the editor. So welcome to The Tome crossover for Fistful of Comics and Games. I do want to throw a quick warning in here. On The Tome here, we do spend quite a bit of time getting pretty in-depth with what we review. So, if you don't want anything spoiled at all for these graphic novels, then this might be something to save for later. I will go pretty in-depth with what the story's all about. I'm going to try to stay away from the finer points. I'm not going to go page by page and explain every single thing that's going on, but I want to sort of give you a broad scope of what the story is for each one of the books. So, consider yourself warned. So the first book in this series is called Homeland, and it starts with a foreword from R.A. Salvatore talking a little bit about the process of whether or not he wanted to do his stories, his novels, in a graphic novel format, and how he found the people at Devil's Due Publishing and decided that it was a good fit. And all in all, interesting. I mean, the guy's a writer, so he writes a decent foreword. But the graphic novel itself starts sort of giving you some flavor for the city of Minzo Baranzan, which is the setting for at least the first book, most of the second book. And Minzo Baranzan, for those people who haven't read the series before, is an underground city populated by dark elves, or drow, in the Forgotten Realms, the popular D&D setting. And the first book really sort of establishes this society. It's a matriarchal society. It's a cruel, cruel society filled with different houses who are constantly warring with each other, but sort of secretly warring with each other. And they all worship this spider goddess Loth, or Loleth, depending on how they decide to spell it this week. The concept of this book is, at first especially, to introduce you to all the main characters that you're going to be bumping into in the next parts of the story. But the most important character they introduce you to is a new child born during the introduction to House Duerden, and that child is named Drizzt, who becomes the main character of our story. He's meant to be sacrificed, but is saved at the last minute. And so they sort of go through his childhood quickly as he's growing up, his young years, his teenage years, sort of as he develops his skills. He's very nimble, very dexterous, and so they decide that they're going to train him as a warrior. At first they thought maybe a wizard, and then they end up going the warrior path because he is so nimble and so quick. They also do quite a bit of characterization of his father, Zach Nafine, in this book, to sort of give you a good connection to him, which is going to be massively significant later. So they continue through his childhood, and as he's growing up and he's becoming a young man, he trains more and more with his father, who's a weapon master, Zach Nafine. And eventually he's off to school. They have a special academy there in Minzo Baranzan, and so he joins the school. There's three schools, actually. There's a wizard school, a school for clerics, and a school for warriors. And so he joins the warrior school and does very, very well for himself there. He succeeds and succeeds and succeeds year after year, and yet the people there and the instructors don't really like him. He doesn't really fit in. He's clearly the best warrior they have in the academy. But he doesn't fit in because he refuses over and over again to use deadly force. He refuses to sort of cheat and scheme and lie his way into position like is common in their society. But yet he continues to succeed over and over again. So he finishes school. He graduates. He goes off. He's part of some patrols that go off and do their thing. And in one of his missions, I guess, for the city, he actually goes to the surface where they attack, where his troop attacks a bunch of surface elves, and he secretly, against the wishes of his people, saves them. And this puts him outside of the favor of the drow goddess, the demon goddess, the spider goddess of Loth. So no longer does he have Loth's favor, which is a big deal, because that means no longer does his house, his family, have Loth's favor, which means they are losing position in Minzo Baranzan, which means that they are at risk of being destroyed by other houses. And this is sort of the basis for a lot of what happens, not just in these series of books, but in the later on in the novels, for a lot of what goes on with Drizzt is based on this idea that he's an outcast because he refuses to obey the edicts of the evil goddess. And so he doesn't quite fit in. He knows he doesn't quite fit in. And he's sort of contemplating what to do about that for the rest of this graphic novel. And eventually, after a bit of an encounter where he gains a new magic item, which is a statuette that calls forth Gwynwyrvar, a panther from the astral plane that becomes his sort of hunting partner for a long time, he eventually decides, okay, I can't survive here and still be who I am. I can't be a good person. I can't make it as a drow in Minzo Baranzan. That's just not me. In order for me to survive as a drow in Minzo Baranzan, I would have to become something that I don't want to be. And so he leaves. He picks up and he goes away. And that's sort of where that one ends. And that's where book two begins, which is titled Exile. Appropriately titled, because this is Drizzt dealing with being exiled from his home, where he was raised, and everything that he knows. This book has another interesting foreword, this time by Ed Greenwood, which is cool because Ed Greenwood is the person who created the Forgotten Realms, talking about how sometimes it can be difficult to create something like this incredibly detailed world and then give it up to all these other people who want to come in and do their own things with it and write their own novels in that world and do their own things, and how even though that's difficult sometimes, he talks about how he wholeheartedly approves of what R.A. Salvatore has done with his Drizzt novels and his other drow stories. So, we get into Book 2, Exile. And in Book 2, Drizzt spends the first part, a good chunk of the story, running around the Underdark, the wild part of the Underdark. Not in the cities, not in the civilized part where people live and survive and do their thing, but he's out there on his own, doing his own thing, doing what he has to do to survive. But meanwhile, his house back in Minzo Baranzan is suffering, and they're under attack because they don't have the favor of Loth. They also introduce a character named Jarl Axel, who becomes not only important in these continued stories, but comes back and becomes important in later novels. And if they continue the trend, they're going to continue coming out with these graphic novels. But Jarl Axel does show up, and for those of you who enjoy Jarl Axel, it's a nice little treat to get to see the man in full color, ready to go. We learn that while Drizzt is running around in the wilds of the Underdark, he is more and more becoming what he calls the hunter, sort of falling back into this bestial rage killing machine, becoming less and less civilized, becoming more and more an animal just to survive, because the Underdark is just filled with horrible monsters. And so when his family sends people out to find him, it's not even much of a fight. He takes them down pretty quickly, figures out how it is that they found him, gets rid of the emblem that they use to track him down magically, and ends up running off to a deep gnome city, which is tricky because he knows that he's had issues with them in the past, and he decides he's going to throw himself at their feet and just walks into town. Meanwhile, his family comes up with another plan, another strategy
to kill Drizzt in order to regain the favor of Loth. And that involves sending his father, who's now undead, after him as this great hunter. Drizzt, meanwhile, finds his way to becoming part of the Deep Gnome Society, while his father cuts a bloody swath through the Underdark looking for him. Eventually, Drizzt decides that he needs to leave the Deep Gnome City. One of the Deep Gnomes goes with him. They adventure through the Underdark. Eventually, they run into a place where they think they can live for a while, and they run into a hook horror, which is an Underdark monster with big, huge claw-like hands, you know, not capable of holding anything, but they're diggers. They can use them to dig through stone and that kind of thing, and a big beak for a face and all that kind of stuff. And he runs into one who's intelligent and not so much a monster, and explains that he's actually a Peck, a completely different race who was transformed by a wizard. And so they go off to find the wizard to get him changed back. But this does not go well, and the hook horror slash Peck actually kills the wizard before he can change him back, sort of falling back into that bestial sort of rage that Drizzt very much relates to and understands, and so is sympathetic to his cause. But, long story short, as they're on their way back from that ordeal, they get captured by a patrol of Mind Flayers, psionic mental creatures who are physically weak but disable the entire troop with their minds. And so when we get into the next part of the story, they are all captured prisoners of these Mind Flayers, and yet they manage to escape. They kill many of their captors, but on their way back to the cavern that they were calling home, this is when they run into the undead Zaknafine, Drizzt's father. And Drizzt convinced one of his friends to run away, even as the hook horror or Peck is killed. And they have this incredibly interesting, beautiful, beautiful fight over a pool of acid. And of course, in the end, Zaknafine comes to himself and throws himself into the acid so that he can't be forced to kill his own son, who's doing something noble. And so Drizzt finally figures that he can't stick around anymore, even in the Underdark, and hide, because he's either going to fall completely into this bestial form where he's a complete monster, which was sort of the whole point of leaving Minzerbrandzan, or he's going to be constantly, constantly hunted by his family, and it'll just never end. So he decides, I have to go to the one place that drow never go, or at least never stay, and they'll never look for me there, and he goes to the surface. And he decides he's going to live under the sun. Which is where we hit book 3, Sojourn, which has a very, very different feel to it. This one doesn't have that theme of I'm being hunted by my family anymore. It sort of talks about his attempts to survive on the surface world, his attempts to maybe even help people and be a good person, and he tries to befriend some people, and that doesn't go so well, and he actually saves some of their lives from these demons that are nearby, and he gets blamed for some of the stuff that was happening, and all, of course, because he's a drow, and everybody on the surface knows that all drow are massively, massively evil, which is not an unfair assessment. It just turns out that in Drizzt's case, it's not so much true. There's a nice little appearance by Dove Falconhand, who's a well-known Forgotten Realms character, as she is hired by the surface people who believe they were attacked by Drizzt to sort of hunt him down and figure out what's going on. And eventually she sort of figures out, you know, this is not a bad person. He actually tried to help them at one point, and so she says, you know what, this isn't worth it. He's not a bad person, and we're gone. And then she leaves. And so the hunt is called off, except for this one guy who's just vehemently hates Drizzt for whatever reason. And that's when Drizzt runs into his new friend and a mentor, a blind man and a ranger, who sort of becomes his friend and becomes his mentor and teaches him how to be a ranger. And so Drizzt becomes a lover of nature and a follower of Maliki, the forest goddess, which is odd for somebody who grew up in caves where there are no trees. And so he lives there with his mentor for a while, and things are going well. And then we find out that this guy who's been hunting Drizzt for a long time is back in the area looking for him, and he teams up with some of his previous opponents, and a winter wolf is involved, and this orc chieftain is involved, and so they get together this small army, and they decide they're going to take on this ranger. For a good chunk of the book, then, are
fighting this battle against this small army and eventually drive them away, but the ranger dies. His mentor dies. Not due to the fight, but over his years and over all of his hardships, he eventually just lays down that winter and dies of old age. And Driss decides he needs to go off and find his own place. And so they do a little bit of a montage of his travels through the surface world and constantly being chased away. And eventually, he finds his way to Icewind Dale, this cold, frozen land up in the north, which is really where they wanted to go with this story. They wanted to get Driss to this place, and they needed to explain how to do it. And so Driss is there, and he's trying to convince the people there that he should be allowed to stay. And they're a little bit more understanding. They don't instantly chase him out just because he's a drow, but they also won't let him in town because it's a safety hazard, because he could be up to something. And so they say, you know what, build up a reputation. Prove to us that you're a good person. Go up on this mountain that's near our town and watch for attacks. And if you do some noble things and stay there for a few years, we might start to trust you and decide that you're an okay person. Meanwhile, inside that mountain, there's a bunch of dwarves living. And one human, Cata Bree, who was adopted by the dwarf king, Bruinner. And so she bumps into Drizzt, and Dad's all mad, and eventually they come to sort of a grudging understanding. I wouldn't say that they're friends at this point, but they come to a grudging understanding. And that's where book three really ends, which is sort of where it needs to end. The whole point of this series, the Legend of Drizzt series, was to explain how the heck did Drizzt get to Icewind Dale and to know and be somewhat friends with Bruinner and Cata Bree and be accepted, and how is it that there's this random drow ranger sitting in this frozen tundra surface mountain, so that you could set up the Icewind Dale novels. Because, as I recall, R.A. Salvatore wrote the Icewind Dale trilogy first. And then people said, wait a minute, this Drizzt character is really cool, but why is he there? He's really out of place. And so he went back and wrote this story. All in all, I found the graphic novels to be well worth my time and well worth my money, which is a big deal because I'm pretty stingy with my money, as my regular listeners know. The third book does come off a little bit disjointed. The first two are very clearly the story of the background of Drizzt, who he is, why he is, and how he came to be a dark elf on the surface world who doesn't happen to be evil. The third book, however, goes very different. And doesn't include all that storyline about being hunted by his family, although it shows up later in the novels, and I assume later in the graphic novels, but it doesn't tie in here. So the first two books had this overall theme of being hunted by his family, and the third book does not. It's very clearly sort of the connector story. It is meant to tell you how Drizzt goes from being the guy in the first two books to the guy that was made famous in the Icewind Dale novels. So I guess the third book has a bit of a different feel, but it does succeed in previewing the Icewind Dale story that is to come next. From an art standpoint, the images of the comic are awesome. There's little to no complaint that I would have about the art. It is perfect for this story. The translation of the novels into comic book format was also awesome. There were times it felt maybe a little bit rushed, like they were trying to stay true to the original story by including some of the main plot points without having necessarily the page space to dedicate to making them full-blown and drawn out like they might have been in novel format. But it seems understandable that they might do something like that. So, that's my thoughts on The Legend of Drizzt graphic novels. A comic book format from an official D&D source reviewed on Fistful of Comics. And games. Done by the host of The Tome, that's me, and you can find me and The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com. It's been fun, and keep your eyes in the skies, whatever that means.
Well, that's the novel's update. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate, sending your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, leave an audio, or call me the Tome hotline at 206-984-1159. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate them. Most of these can be found on the website at http://thetome.podbean.com. This has been episode 16, novel update of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
Episode 17, and in this episode, we will be reading, and in episode 17, if you have any further news for the Tome, please feel,
and then we'll get back into the review. Now, a quick word from J.C. Hutchins, who you're going to hear more from in an upcoming episode. Ike, Shut Up, which is the last book in Wild, and Jarl Axel, the Drow, Mercant.
In many ways, this is one of Salvatore's best novels, and in some ways, I found it a little bit disappointing. Jarl Axel, on the other hand, is always fun to have, while at the same time, and very different in the same of Artemis and Jarl Axel are in Damara. They are dealing with King Gareth and his King Gareth's knights, based on one of the... All that said, it is an interesting book. As somebody who likes to get certain novels in hardbound, this review will cover three trilogies. The idea behind the novels... This was awesome. The War-Torn, The Orb of Zoriat by Edward Bulme, Shadows of the Last War. I wanted to go ahead and give you a chance to hear what I had to think of episode 17,